Okay, let us now take up a matrix representation of convolution. Now here also, let us start with 1D, and there are two versions of convolution that we need to be aware of, including the linear convolution and periodic or circular convolution. So let's see how to handle this. With images now represented as vectors, linear system operations such as convolution and filtering may be represented as matrix vector multiplication. And if you don't like the word vector, you can remove it and say matrix multiplication, because a vector is also a matrix. So let us consider first the one-dimensional linear shift invariant system. And let's assume causality in 1D, and let's consider the infinite impulse response situation. The output is the convolution of the input F with the impulse response H. So this is simply Gn is the sum on alpha going 0 to n, F alpha Hn minus alpha. The summation starts with 0 because of causality, and up to n also because it is causal, so you don't look further ahead. The origin in time is taken to be 0. So F alpha, that's the input signal, Hn minus alpha is the reversed impulse response, and then shifted. Now, if the input is given for n samples, we could represent the output over that interval by writing the input as F0, F1, so on up to F capital N. Suppose you have n samples of the input. Write the signal as this matrix, and then the output is G0, so on, G1, G2, Gn. And due to causality, we don't have anything before 0, and the output is also up to capital N only. So they are both N by 1 matrices. Now, what has to go here? In G equal to HF, convolution is expressed as G equal to HF, where H is a matrix, and what goes into the matrix is the question. Now, you're going to multiply this matrix F with the matrix H, so you take F and lay it flat on each row. So take this and put it on the row and you get the output. So for the first row, G0, if you go back to this expression of convolution, for n equal to 0, you have the sum from alpha equal to 0 to n, which is 0, F alpha 0, H n minus alpha, H 0. So for n equal to 0, G0 is F0, H0. And there is nothing more in this summation. So you have F0 multiplied with H0, and the others, because of causality, they don't enter the output, so the values are all 0 for the first row. Now for n equal to 1, go back to the convolution formula. G1 is sum alpha going 0 to 1, F alpha Hn minus alpha. N is equal to 1, so it is 1 minus alpha. So sum alpha going 0 to 1, there are only two values. For alpha equal to 0, you get F alpha H1. And for alpha equal to 1, you get F1 H0. So in the matrix, you have H1, H0, and then 0. So when you multiply this F with H, you get F0 H1 plus F1 H0, which agrees with the convolution formula. And all the remaining elements are 0. So what I would ask you to do is just take that convolution expression and write it for the first 3-4 values and write each product that you get. So for first you get F0 H0. For the second one you get F1 H1. I'm sorry, F0 H1 plus F1 H0 and then 0. The next one, there'll be another value entering, F0, F1, F2. There are three input values coming in, and they get multiplied with H2, H1, H0 because H has been reversed, this sequence will go backward, and the rest are all zero. And so on, at the end, you get Gn, the current output, the nth value of the output will use all the input samples available from zero until capital N. We are assuming that the impulse response is of infinite length, but of course there are only n input samples, n plus 1 samples rather here, so only those values of the impulse response, the first n plus 1 values of the impulse response will come in, get multiplied by these samples in reversed order and added. So this is the matrix representation of one-dimensional convolution. Okay? Is that clear? So again, I would ask you to expand the one-dimensional convolution summation formula. Write this formula for a few different values of n and expand, and you will see this arrangement coming out. So discrete convolution in 1D may be expressed in this format by matrix multiplication. Now, this matrix H is toplets-like matrix, where you see the same value, H0, on the main diagonal, and then H1 in another diagonal, and then H2, and they are arranged in this manner. A toplets matrix is a square matrix whose elements are equal along every diagonal. Now, on the other side, you have a bunch of zeros, so this would be called a toplets-like matrix. And if the impulse response is shorter than the signal, we said it is infinite impulse response, but if the duration of H, if it is not an infinite impulse response filter, if it is a finite impulse response filter, then N, the impulse response may be shorter than duration of the input signal, and then there could be a bunch of zeros here. So there could be zeros or very small values here. And then that matrix H is said to be banded if you have zeros on this side as well as on the upper side. Now, if you come to the finite impulse response case, FIR filter, if you have a finite impulse response filter of impulse response with m plus 1 samples, then there are a few different ways of expressing the output. In some cases, you may want to show the convolution as a moving window operation with the index alpha going n minus m over 2 to n plus m over 2, where m is an even number. F alpha, Hn minus alpha. And then Gn could also be expressed in this format by shifting the reference point, alpha equal to 0 to m sum, F alpha plus n minus m over 2, Hm over 2 minus alpha. So this facilitates the moving window impression or analysis of the convolution, and you get this representation where the input is expressed from F minus M over 2 to F n plus M over 2. And the output from G0 to Gn is shown in this matrix. The input matrix is shifted with respect to the output with minus M over 2 because you're using that many pass samples with reference to the center point here. And the impulse response values are arranged in this manner, H0 to Hm over 2 on one side, and H0 to H minus m over 2 on the other side. And this block of values is shifted one position at a time. So the same values occur in each row, and each time it is shifted by one position. Okay. So now we have H is as a banded matrix because there are zeros on both sides. Each row of H, except the first, is a right-shifted version of the preceding row. And M is less than N. That is, the number of samples in the impulse response is less than the number of samples in the input signal. Now, this is one particular case, and we could ignore it for now. We're not going to use much of that representation. This next representation is a bit simpler and easier to follow. Now, we will consider periodic convolution, and then we will relate it to the Fourier transform, and we will make the observation also that periodic convolution may be used to achieve the same result as linear convolution with appropriate extension of the data with zeros. So in periodic convolution, all signals are assumed to be of finite duration and period, with the period being n samples. So in order to perform periodic operations, all signals must have the same period. And regardless of whether the signals are periodic or not, in real life, we could imagine periodic extensions of the given signal. Suppose you just make an observation of a signal with n samples. Of course, it's not periodic. If I take your picture, you're not periodic. But I could imagine an extended version where I have copied the same data over and over again. And that is, a matter of representation here. What I'm interested in, of course, will be the data over just one period, which will be the original observed data. The periodic extension is a matter of representation here so that we can extend the notion to convolution using the DFT, where, because of the fact that we are going round and round the circle with the same basis functions, everything has to be periodic by the notation and by the representation. So we could imagine a periodically extended version of the given data, although in real life, the data are not periodic. So if you have observed a signal of only n samples, just imagine that it repeats. Now, periodic shifting, convolution involves reversal and shifting. So we need to take into account periodicity in shifting. So samples that go out of the frame of n samples at one end will reappear at the other end. So all shifting will be periodic, and the subscript P here indicates that when you shift something, when a signal is shifted by one position, the spot that is vacated is filled by the last value that went out of the frame coming back. Or you can imagine that when you shift one period of the signal, the data in one period, the periodic extension of that same data that existed outside your frame of reference will come into your frame, and the sample that went out on one end will come through the other end. One other interpretation of this is to imagine the values of your n samples of the signal written around a drum, around the periphery of a cylinder. And as you rotate it, and you have a certain reference point, as you rotate, one sample goes out, but another sample comes in. Or the sample that goes out of one frame will come back from the other end. So periodic shifting could be seen in a few different ways. But mathematically, you could also consider that as counting modulo n. So when you shift and there are only n samples, or you can only count up to n, n plus 1 will become 1. You subtract n. N plus 2 is 2. So you count this n minus alpha, which is the shift involved in convolution, modulo n. If it is negative, suppose your signal values go from 1 to n, and you get a value of minus 2, you just add n to it, because n is the periodicity. So minus 2 will be minus 2 plus n, which is n minus 2. So convolution is expressed in this manner. The sum alpha going 0 to n minus 1, fp alpha, but here it doesn't matter because we are running alpha from 0 to n minus 1 only, hp n minus alpha. Here we are writing minus alpha as required for convolution. One signal is reversed, plus n. And there, the values will be negative. And for that reason, you write this as modulo n. So the result of periodic convolution of two periodic signals of n samples each, or period of n, will also be a periodic signal with the same period n. On the other hand, the result of linear convolution would have 2n minus 1 samples. So there is a distinction here between the two types of convolution. Now, periodic convolution may be used to achieve the same result as linear convolution by padding the signals with zeros so as to increase the duration to 2n minus 1 samples at least. I'll show some examples later. So this is an important point when you are implementing convolution with DFT, where periodic convolution is the result. So you have to pad these signals and make them longer and have a period of at least 2n minus 1 samples, and then the result of periodic or circular convolution will be the same as linear convolution because the zero values that you put in the beginning will be, the space will be used up to compute the extra samples that arise due to linear convolution. So remember that implementing convolution as the inverse DFT of the product of the DFTs of two signals will result in periodic or circular convolution, and zero padding will be necessary if what you want is linear convolution. And if what you are representing is a real-life causal linear shift invariant system, then linear convolution is what you want, because a real-life physical system will perform linear convolution in real-time in causal systems. So periodic convolution can now be expressed using this matrix operation G equal to HF that I had shown earlier, but now we have an interesting property. The signal, input signal, is written as F0, F1, up to Fn minus 1. There are n samples going 0 to n minus 1. This is your observed signal, and you could imagine this to be periodic. The output is also of n samples, G0, G1, Gn minus 1. Now, earlier, we had written the matrix H as simply, for the first row, H0 and 0. Now, in periodic convolution, due to periodic shifting, that doesn't happen. You get F0 multiplied with H0 and F1 multiplied with H of minus 1, but because H of minus 1 doesn't exist, you have to add n to it, and that becomes Hn minus 1. And then Hn minus 2, so on, H1. So this is the impulse response written in reverse order. And then H1, this is shifted. For the output at n equal to 1, you get F0 multiplied with H1, F1 multiplied with H0, F2 multiplied with H minus 1, but to that you add 1, so it is after 0 you get n minus 1 going backward, and then all the way down to H2, H1 is here, and so on to the end. Now you see that this matrix H is a right circular shift. Each row is obtained by shifting the previous row. H0 was there, the next row, H0, is here. H1 was there, and if you shift it, H1 goes outside but comes back here. And so on all the way to the end. And even for the last row, if you take this and shift to the right by one sample, H0 goes out, comes back here at the top. Hn minus 1 was here, it comes there. and so on. So the right shifting of each row to obtain the next row applies from the bottom row to the top row again. And such a matrix is called a circulant matrix, where the same values are arranged in a circularly shifted manner from one row to the next. And again, I would ask you to take this expression for convolution and take n equal to a small number like 4 or 3. Yeah, 4. Alpha equal to 0, 1, 2, 3. And n going 0, 1, 2, 3. And please write this and make sure that you get a matrix like that, where you get H0, H3, 2, 1. And then H1, 0, 3, 2. Just take 4 samples and do this exercise. And then you will see that this is correct. And then G equal to HF represents convolution. But this is circular or periodic convolution. We'll take some illustrations of convolution, but let's take a break. It's 10:20, a little past 10:20. Let's take a 10-minute break.